Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hi, welcome to Saved by the Bellini, the podcast. My name is John DeBerry, and I am super excited to share this series of interviews with everybody here, and very grateful that Heritage Radio Network is gracious enough to give me the space to do these interviews. I wanted to do this podcast because I had such a good time writing my cocktail book, Saved by the Bellini, which, putting the pieces together. It's a cocktail book that's about the 90s. Saved by the Bellini is a reference to Saved by the Bell, and a Bellini is obviously a cocktail. And so it was just a really, really fun book, and there were a lot of very kind of disparate influences and people who had a hand in making this book what it is, whether that was a direct hand or sort of more indirect. And so I wanted to see if I could tie some of that all together and make a little bunch of interviews, a little mini series, to give people a peek into how a book gets made, how this book got made, how I became a bartender, and those people who had an influence on me. So we're going to interview people like my former boss and longtime mentor Jim Meehan, who was in charge of PDT for many years, and he's also written a bunch of cocktail books. And it's a tremendous influence on, pretty much everybody in the industry. And then also skipping around to people like Brian Raftery, who is this really cool film journalist. And he wrote a book about 1999 as this spectacular watershed year in cinema. And it was one of the reasons why I identified the 90s as a really compelling thing to write about. But this first interview is going to be with Clara Kirkpatrick, who was the illustrator, for Saved by the Bellini, and her, and this is obviously a podcast, so you can't see it, but her visual style is extremely it just screams 90s. It screams like Daria, Beavis and Butthead, Memphis kind of style. And the approach that she took to this book was just, I think, what really made this book so special. And I got so lucky to be able to work with her, and then lucky that she was gracious enough to come into the studio and chat with me about her process and everything. And so I hope you'll enjoy this interview, and thanks for listening. Cheers. We're here with Clara Kirkpatrick, the illustrator of Saved by the Bellini. Thank you so much for coming here to talk to me about this book that we
Thank
both
you
worked
for
on.
Having me.
Yeah. So I don't really know where to begin. I feel like I have so many questions for you. Like, we only met for the first time like 3 days ago, like in person.
Yeah.
Which sounds crazy, but it's just that's the way books get made.
Yeah.
It's true. I would, before getting specifically into the book and how we work together and all of that, I'm just so curious to hear about like what got you into illustrating. Like, tell me about all of that.
So I grew up in the city. I grew up on 14th Street, and my parents are both my mom's a painter. She's an artist, fully, just like a fine artist, which you don't really meet those that often these days. Mm. But she is a teacher a professor at SVA. And so I kind of grew up always drawing. That was my favorite thing to do from like day one. And my dad's a writer, so I had a very like creative childhood, just growing up as an only child on 14th Street, kind of a wild childhood maybe, but it was cool. It was really cool. And I think, what's funny though, is that my parents were really adamant that I not be an artist, and they didn't say I couldn't be an artist, but they said they wanted me to like fully, go to college, study something academic, and then make my decision or whatever, then go from there. So I was never allowed to study. You know, they were like, we're paying all this money for you to go to college. You're not going to go to some like really good college and then study art at like a shitty art department. Not to be mean, but that's just the truth. So then I went undergrad. I studied art history. I went to Grinnell College, which is in Iowa, but it's like a super good school. I loved it. But then when I left, I found myself just not really wanting to be, I don't know, what do you do with an art history degree? You either, you know, you go into academia or you work in like a museum or you do curatorial. I don't know. There's lots of paths, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't me. It wasn't right. And so then I went and I worked at a PR firm and I would draw at my desk all day long. I was the worst employee ever, like ever, ever, ever. But I worked there for like 3 years and I would basically draw all day long, seriously. And I would go home and I would draw and I would just, I don't know. And then I just like really wasn't finding my groove. Mm-hmm. But at this point I was so young. It wasn't like a big deal that I hadn't. But and then all of a sudden one day it just sort of hit me. I was in a really, I don't know, I felt like I was in a rut, but then it just hit me that I really needed to go back to school for illustration. So, because that was the one, like, constant through my life. I mean, in high school, people called me art girl. So,
wow.
I feel like I've always had that identity, but it just sort of, I didn't know how to make a career out of it or whatever that means. I don't know how to do that still, but it's, you know, it's coming together.
Yeah, I would say it is. Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good segue to talking about this actual project that we both worked on. My book, Saved by the Bellini, out now.
Yeah.
Have to plug it. And we basically found each other through like mutual friends, through Grant.
Yeah.
When you first heard about the idea of doing a book that, I don't even know how this was even presented to you, honestly, but like when someone says to you like, hey, do you want to illustrate a cocktail book about the 90s? Like, what did that do for you?
I mean, immediately, yes. Definitely immediately, yes, because it sounded so fun. I think Amanda said something to me like, I have the most fun project ever.
Amanda, who's idea. My editor,
yeah.
Who's also going to be on this podcast.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember. It was like a very sort of like short email with very little detail, but I was like, yes. So I didn't have to give it much thought, but okay.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad that it resonated with you. And do you, is the 90s something that you, think a lot about or have fond or bad or whatever, feel some kind of way about, like, what is your personal relationship to this decade?
For sure. I think I revealed the other night, definitely to Amanda, that I was born in 92.
Okay.
So I missed 2 years of the 90s, but I for sure identify with the 90s. I mean, all the things in the book I knew of and loved or, you know, came on the tail end of for some of them. But, I mean, for example, like a Tamagotchi egg.
Right.
Definitely live for those.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at the cover of the book right now and I see that and I was like, oh yeah, I would not stop playing with those for years. But I love the 90s. I mean, yeah, living in New York City in the 90s was kind of crazy. It's a lot different now, but
yeah,
I had very fond memories of the 90s.
Yeah, it's almost like it's interesting to think about, like, you know, because you're born in 92, I was born in 82. So it's like, almost like having, it's like the fact that there was not a ton of like baggage, so to speak, maybe might have made your ability to draw it more kind of like, I don't know.
That's true. It's a deeper memory and it's more like based on things I've seen since then in a certain way too, maybe.
Or like there's some bias of like, you know, I lived through this, so yeah, I'm going to draw this some certain way or
totally
kind of put a spin on it, which I guess is sort of your job. You know, you were definitely meant to put your own artistic spin on this for sure. And I think that the, you know, when I was looking through, you know, when we were looking for illustrators and we were looking through, you know, various, you know, Instagrams and people, and, you know, there was definitely, it it felt like there was like an aesthetic that is rooted in some part by like kind of this sort of for 90s sure. cartoony, vaguely Memphis-y
totally.
Kind of style. Where did you develop that? Because it's very like real. Like it's very noticeable. Like you can tell yeah. your artistic style is very.
It definitely has to do with growing up watching TV in the 90s. I don't know exactly what years Arthur was on. I mean, I don't know. Like when. Gosh. But Arthur was like one of my favorites. And actually, it's really funny looking at it now because there's so much about Arthur that really influences me, just like in the line work and the colors. Mm. Sailor Moon was super influential to me. I would say Hey Arnold played a large role in my childhood. It was just one of my favorite shows. And then just, yeah, all the cartoons, absorbing it all and sort of that same style of using, it's a comic style, really, ultimately, mm-hmm. but, you know, more stylized and less, like, you know, realist figures and everything, but it's basically, you know, like line art filled with color. I mean, I basically make my own coloring book when I work. That's sort of almost how I would describe my process.
Cool. Actually, that was my next question is like, can you just like as nerdily and technically as possible, like what sure. is your, process? Like when you're, you know, given an assignment or you're like, oh, I want to draw this. Like, how does that go from being nothing to being a full blown illustration?
So another thing that definitely stems from the 90s too is like I'm obsessed with the texture of like marker and pen, and I think that goes back to like the days of, you know, just sitting there scribbling
Mr. with marker. Sketch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think all my drawings start with first I pencil the sketch, and then these are all done with like a pretty thick, or not that thick actually, but a pen, a marker, a Japanese marker that is like, you know, and what's funny is I keep like a whole stock of them, and I only use them I use them when they're like running out. I like prefer a little bit of dryness. So you'll see in certain areas, you can see that it's sort of slightly running out. And I think that just gives it character because there's so many illustrators these days that are just strictly digital. And I think working digitally gives you so much flexibility, and I would never give that up entirely, but I love starting with a marker. I noticed if you look at the which one was it? God, I just looked this morning and I could see like the sketchiness of the marker. I think it was the Nerf.
The Balzooka.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see like on the bottom of the glass there's like in a way that I strive. I like that. I like a little bit of that sort of sketchiness. But yeah, so what I do is I draw it with a pencil, then I go over and make any edits and exactly. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. And I go in with a pen, this marker, and then I scan it to Photoshop, adjust it. I use a technique that basically allows me to put all my line work on the top layer on Photoshop. So basically creating myself a digital coloring book.
Got it.
And then I go beneath it and I color. And I have, and the reason I color digitally is because I have access to every color. But I keep it really simple. And another thing that makes it look more 90s probably is that all my colors are, I kind of keep it pretty flat. I do a little bit of shading, a little bit of like contouring, but that's another thing about kind of 90s style cartoons is that they were just like these flat, poppy areas of color that I think, I mean, within reason, there's highlights and everything.
Right.
But very juicy, like stylized highlights. And then
it is juicy.
Yeah. I try to keep it juicy looking.
Yeah. I find that when people pick up the book, they are like, oh, this feels very like soft. And I'm like, I don't think it actually is like the texture of the physical book. I think it's actually like the way that the art is landing. Like it's like a juicy.
Yeah.
Like kind of generous and fun.
Yeah. I like drawings to feel alive.
Yeah.
And that I think that especially with this topic, which is so fun and wild and, you know, in a certain way for an illustrator, it's like a real dream project because it's so creative, and there's, and it's, the references are so fun that there's no way for it to be dull.
It almost looks like it's like a still from like, hopefully this is not like an unflattering comparison, but like Beavis and Butthead, or like
totally,
or like Daria, where there's like the lines are always like quivering, or like what is it?
Line boil. Oh yeah. Totally. No, that's completely, totally on the spot. I mean, Beavis and Butthead, it all stems from, and even like Doug.
Yeah, I was gonna say
Love Doug. Doug. Yeah. I'm blanking on all of my influences, but these are all definitely.
And that's what it's called. It's called line boil.
Well, line boils when in I don't even know. It's in stop motion animation when the line just quivers and goes back and forth. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's called that. The technique I know is called line boil, and that's like my favorite style of like very simple animation.
I love that.
Yeah.
Line boil.
Yeah, line boil.
So going, maybe I'm curious more about like some like. Like overt kind of influences, like in your in your style, like are there any artists or either visual or otherwise, like that you're really just like that you've been drawing on for your whole career, that like you think really shaped like kind of who you are?
Totally. I think I always loved R. Crumb, and I know he's totally like crazy person, and I don't necessarily like back his like life philosophy. I mean, I don't know, he's pretty sexist, but okay. And he's, you know, he's like problematic in certain ways, but his drawing style is like super cool,
very beautiful. Recognizable. Yeah,
very recognizable. I definitely grew up loving him. Oh, another huge influence for me, Archie. Like, I collected Archie. I put them in these, like, laminated folders, and I had, like, I had binders and binders full of Archie. So for me, that's another... It's funny now, again, looking back at all these and seeing, like, you know, that I really do draw in a way that's so influenced by Archie. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, truthfully, I think my mom... She has a very sort of like cartoony pop-y style at times. And so there's no way I could say that she didn't influence me. I'm trying to think of other people. Not necessarily always purposefully either.
Right.
You know? I know we talked about Lisa Frank in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I always had Lisa Frank folders. I feel like my drawings aren't quite as like wild or like... I don't know. I mean, the color, I would like to think in general, the colors are slightly more toned down than that, but they definitely feel wild at times like hers do.
Yeah. The illustration for the Kitty Highball, which is the Claire's.
Totally.
It definitely has a Lisa Frank feeling, but yeah, there's a certain like, not pastel, but like a certain, relative like muting of the Lisa Frank aesthetic, where it's right. Like not quite as like saturated.
Yeah, it's like it's a little more like garish and saturated. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I think she definitely. I always had the folders. I'm trying to think what else. A lot of things I definitely absorbed and don't even necessarily know that are influences for me. So.
So we're gonna take. I want to ask you about some like individual. Pieces of artwork from the book, but we're going to take a tiny little break and then we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Okay, and we are back with Clara Kirkpatrick, the illustrator for Saved by the Bellini, my book. And I am so curious to hear about some of, like, maybe your favorites, or maybe something that was, like, more daunting, or your least favorite, or whatever.
Totally.
Just, like, some highlights for you of your work from the book that you want to talk about.
Totally. I'm trying to think. Well, for me, one thing I always struggle with is, especially once you get into the groove of a style, and I think style is something that comes both naturally and not naturally, of course, and it does slightly depend on the project I'm working on. The way I may sit down and draw like a cartoon is slightly different from how I approach this book, but I think giving all of the drinks this like person, what's it called? What's it called when you give something like an object?
Oh, are you anthropomorphized?
Anthropomorphizing, yes. The drinks was definitely a really good like entry point and approach to sort of the whole thing. And that was your idea. It was, I forget which. I feel like early on, Ian mentioned that you liked the idea of, I think, or maybe Ian, I don't know.
If it's a good idea, then it was definitely
yours. Definitely yours. No, I think maybe I started with like, one of them was like, Oat So Quiet was one of the first ones. And then that sort of style of having the drinks just be these like fun, funky things with arms and legs a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Was a good like, A, entry point, and B, like, establishing that this was going to be, like, really fun, cartoony, and just, like, go for it.
Oh, that's so interesting, because, like, for those of you who are not familiar with the book, it's Oat So Quiet, which is an oat milk cocktail that's based on the Bjork music video, which was directed by Spike Jonze. And in the music video, there's, like, all of these, like, it's, like, Bjork, like, dancing through a car dealership, basically, and at a certain point, like, columns and post office boxes just come to life. And I think I actually spent a lot of time like trying to get the screenshots of that right so I could send it to you properly.
Yeah.
And it's cool to think about that as then informing the rest of the book, because I don't know if I actually maybe explicitly was like, oh, I want these drinks to all have arms and legs.
But yeah. No,
a lot of these
know.
Drinks do have arms and legs.
They do. No, I think what happened is the mailbox had the arms and legs, and then it was like, let's just give them all.
Let's just give them all arms and
legs. Let's go for it. And maybe that was in my conversations with Ian. I don't know. But it sort of was like a nice way to begin. And then I would say in general, like my main issue overall as an illustrator is often like I don't exactly know how to approach portraits of people or like specific people are really difficult once you're like already in a cartoony style that's like quite stylized and loose. It's sort of hard to then give somebody a likeness without like, I don't know. You want to like do it, them, give them, you want to give them the character. I don't know.
Like it's one or the other.
And it's tough to find sort of a middle ground, which it definitely took. I mean, there are, it's all cartoony. And then that's how it should be, I think. But I think that was one difficulty for me in general, but I don't know. I mean, some of my favorites, I think I was looking through them recently. I love the Macarena one, which is just like so fun. And just like, obviously it is like stuck in my head now for forever. Yeah. And then what else? I love the... Oh, yeah, I love the Capri Sun one, the dancing Capri Sun. It's just fun to go back to all the snacks that I used to, you know.
Yeah.
All of that. But it's funny because I wasn't really ever allowed to have any of those snacks.
Same.
My parents never got me any of those snacks.
Yeah, this is, like, the book was a lot of, it's, like, sort of, like, retconning my childhood and,
yeah.
Like, oh, like, I actually ate sugar cereal. No, I didn't. Like,
yeah. I had it was like once in a bloom.
Yeah. Like I had Fruity Pebbles when I was like for the first time when I was like 20.
Yeah. And those are excellent. But yeah, no, I was like so not allowed. I'm trying to think what else. Like, yeah. And like snack. Well, I mean, it is really funny because like as an adult, those are things that I find myself like wanting and craving. But as a kid, I didn't even care that I couldn't eat them really. I was just
I cared so much.
You did.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I was so manipulative with my parents. Like looked up the ingredients for fruit roll-ups. And I'm like, oh, it's pear puree. I'm like, Mom, look, yeah. It's like fruit.
There's fiber.
And it worked a little bit. Like, it didn't go all the way, but I couldn't
She's
get
like good argument.
I couldn't get, yeah, she was like, all right, you got me. I wanted to ask you about the illustration for the Barbie girl. Drink, like where, cause so in, you know, since this is a podcast, the illustration is a blonde woman driving a pink car. And there's behind her is this sort of like Potemkin village, like billboard depictions of like a house and like the cocktail, obviously, and then a palm tree. Like, I don't think I gave you much in the way of like, oh, I want this to look like that. Like, you know, I wasn't super explicit. I think I probably sent you a few stills from the music video and then a picture of the drink.
Yeah.
Where did this Potemkin village, like, you know, fake, you know, obvious fake kind of thing come from? Like, I just think that was so brilliant.
This one was one that had multiple versions for sure. Oh, yeah. 'Cause some of them, like, I did them and it was like, great, it's done. But some of them had like multiple, you know, and maybe not even ones that you'd seen. I'm not sure, but
I don't know. Yeah.
I think it was Ian's idea to have those pieces in the background be like obviously props. I could be wrong, but we definitely had some conversations about that one specifically, definitely looking heavily at the music video and making sure that, like, you know, the colors and the flowers, like, I'm pretty sure they drive like through, you know, a neighborhood and there's like grass and like pink flowers.
And it's like very, I think I
changed. Yeah, exactly. And I think I did, you know, change things to some degree, but I don't know. Yeah. It is funny. A lot of times when people ask me like how, and I will say in this whole project, like the combination of the writing being so easy to draw from and so easy to visualize because it was so fun. And then having Ian there who's the art director to sort of just like bounce ideas back and forth with. And he just like so got it. And we just like spoke the same language. But in general, what's funny for me is that I don't necessarily usually plan out what I do at all. It just sort of goes.
Mm.
And I think that's because my brain really works best when I'm drawing. I have a harder time, you know, formulating an idea verbally than I do either written or on, you know, in a drawing.
Right. So you're not going to say like, okay, I'm going to draw this thing and type out a paragraph.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and it's like, usually I think at this point, what's easier is I've done so much illustrating at this point that my brain goes, how would I do this the most successfully? I think we need to have a car at this angle. I would like to have like the character look like this, hair flying. Like there are just certain things I know I always want to have or that I think give it a fun, like successful, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was actually curious about like how long these things take you, because it's like, I could see like based on this conversation and just assuming like this, the process is like some to just like, and you're just done. And others you're like really totally struggling. And I'm trying to remember, like, I don't think I really like had much in the way of edits
when I saw it.
I was like, oh, maybe let's move this here.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, oh, that's totally not what I'm looking for. Like, it was, very, very marginal.
And I think that also maybe made me feel more confident, too, throughout the whole thing. Because, like, some of the first ones I sent had very few edits, and I was like, okay, so I'm getting it. And then I was like, okay, let's go. But I think it depends on the drawing. Some of them took me, like, a long time, and then, like, some of them took me like less than an hour.
Wow.
I mean, not, I wouldn't say less than an hour, but like to draw, to like actually do the line work of, for example, the chasing waterfalls one, I think it took me probably 30 minutes to the marker. I'm also like crazy fast. Mm-hmm. I can be too fast.
Yeah, you were very fast.
And it's something that I have to like work on, because sometimes I do something and I'm like, it's done, it's perfect. And now I need to post on Instagram. And then I'm like, wait, let me just take a breath. Like, do I even like this? Like, I like executed this whole thing. It's almost like a contest with myself, but it is an important skill to have as an illustrator to be able to go fast. That's for sure. Because like with editorial stuff, sometimes you have like 2 hours, whatever. Wow. So it can be fast. Sometimes if you don't reply to the email asking you about a job, like I had the New York Times ask me about a job once and I didn't reply to the email right away. And she was like, I'm so sorry. We already gave it to someone else. Wow. 'Cause in the like meantime, and I was like, damn it.
Wow.
But, these things happen. There'll be another, but you know, this, yeah. So I would say some of them were super fast. Mm-hmm. And then like the Dookie inspired the Green Day one.
I mean, that was a really detailed illustration.
Yeah, like
you did a really good job.
Thanks.
it almost like reminds me. So the Green Day Dookie is an album from the 90s that I wrote about. And there's this, the cover of the album is almost like a Where's Waldo.
It's so good too. Yeah. I was like lost looking at it. I love the original. Like it's whoever, I forget the name of the artist's name is on the corner. Of the original one, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's definitely the poster lended itself to my style pretty nicely. Like it wasn't that hard of a transition to sort of draw from it.
Yeah.
But that one took longer just because there were so many little dogs
smoking weed.
Yeah.
Or smoking something.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like when you did this illustration, for instance, where it's like a lot of small pieces and, you know, placed, you know, very tightly, do you actually create like the individual drawing and then you like throw it in, or is it all kind of part of the same?
It's work? All one.
Okay.
So it's like the nice thing is I draw it with pencil, and that's where I'm like moving things around, figuring out the composition. Then I go over it in pen, and I always make tons of mistakes in the pen layer, but I'm not too precious with it because then I just scan it. I can delete anything, and I can go in and add with a pen digitally, and you wouldn't know that part is like digital pen and the other part. So I usually, that's how I work. So, but no, it's all one. Like if you look at, I was actually just looking through the drawings for this book. They're all just marker in one page. And in certain cases, I'll do the front element and the background separately. Mm. So like some of the ones that are like a cocktail in the front and the background is something separate going on, that will be two separate drawings. But for the most part, it's like one unified composition, and I do it on 8.5 by 11 printer paper. That's what I like. That's what I like to use. It's just easier.
Is that unique or is that...
I don't know if it's unique or not. I do think certain people are... Every illustrator is very specific about their materials, and they usually use the same thing over and over. And it's oftentimes nothing special, but it's just what gives them the right quality.
Yeah.
Like for me, I find like printer paper has the best amount of texture and give to it. So it's like it works just best with the materials I like.
This is like such a particular question, but I'm just craving asking it. Do you have one? Is it one piece of? Because I'm very particular about the kind of like how much give like the surface I'm writing on.
100%.
Is it like one piece of printer paper on like wood, or is it like a stack of printer paper? Like
it's
what
a
is that?
Stack of printer paper, a stack of printer paper on like a book. Like I always, and it's really funny. I guess what's really ironic about it is it goes back to the days of like me being a kid and watching TV and taking one of my parents' big books, like an art book, and I would take the book and I would put a stack of printer paper on it, and then I would get a pen, get a pencil, get an eraser, and that's all. And then I would like sit in front of the TV for hours just drawing. And that's exactly how I still work.
Wow.
And if I'm really working hard on a deadline, sometimes I have TV playing. Depends on what I'm doing.
Hmm.
But, yeah. So it's sort of, like, kind of funny. I never really thought about that, but it is just, like, how I'm most comfortable working.
That's so cool. I love that. I'm also curious about your Instagram handle, because your Instagram is great, but Doodle Deli.
Yeah.
It's Doodle_Deli, right? Everyone... check it out. What is, how'd you get that name?
So it's funny. I I don't know how I came up with the name exactly. I came up with it when I was at SVA. I was in grad school, and it was like my first... I had been posting drawings on my personal Instagram a little bit, and then I was like, nobody wants to see these. Or if they do, they want to like have it be a separate experience. Right. I don't know. At the time, I was... like a lot more experimental. I was more of what I would call like just like a someone who likes to draw than an illustrator. I really do feel like I have put in thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of like drawing, and it has made such a difference in like, it's just crazy like how much you can change and how much you can grow as an artist in like if you just put in time. I really do
just
believe
doing
that.
It.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with like a desire and like I'm sure some degree of like skill or whatever, but like, or even just an interest. But I do feel like I have put in like all that time. But basically, when I was at SVA, I created this handle. It just sort of like, I was like rhyming things with doodle. I don't know. I don't really know. And then I was like Deli, because I'm like a New Yorker and I love that like. Works. And I would, at the time, I did tons. I always loved drawing food, so it's always been sort of a thing. I did a zine in grad school at Katz's, and I did all these like little things. So it totally just like aligned. And then it was funny. A professor of mine, he told everyone, if you have an Instagram that has something that's other than your name, like you should really delete it and get rid of it because it's like just not professional. It's just not going to work. And then he like went around the room and he was going to people and saying like, what's your Instagram? Let's see, like, should we make it your name? Like, let's fix this.
Wow.
And then he got to mine and he was like, keep that. It's funny. He was like, I love it. Doodle Deli. Doodle Deli. You can't forget it. I was like, okay, sure.
That's so funny.
So I kept it. But it is kind of funny because sometimes I'm like, when I'm in this like magazine, it says my name, but it's fine. You can find me if you search my name as well.
Right, your Instagram is like Claire Kirkpatrick.
It's yeah.
The alias or the handle is Doodle Deli. Yeah, I have the same. I actually have the same thing where it's like I feel like my Instagram handle is JND3001, which is sort of a riff on my college email, which was JND2001.
Love.
As being like too esoteric, and I should just change it to like John DeBerry.
No,
but then it's like, you know what?
If you search your name, it still comes up.
Then it's like, you know what? Like, they can find
me. Exactly. I like it.
They can find me. And also just, wow, this, the concept, not to feel old, but like the idea of a college professor or a university professor going around and like evaluating your Instagram handle. Like,
I know. It is weird.
Yeah. Like, rock and my day, we didn't have Instagram. Yeah.
No, I mean, true. I didn't have it in college, but in grad school.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is funny. I agree.
But I guess that's part of, like, if you're training people on how to be artists, like, it's
I mean, SVA was great in that way, yeah. It was right around when Instagram was, like, huge. I mean, Instagram has changed everything for illustrators because, like, my portfolio is just there. And a lot of times I'll do a job and I'll ask – I always like to ask, like, how'd you find me? Just curious.
Right.
And almost always they say Instagram or, like, I saw you and whatever. But I think everything really – it helps me a lot.
Yeah, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Instagram
for sure.
Is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And speaking of, where does your work, other than my book, where does, or our book, I feel like people are, I feel like whenever anyone's like, your book is so good, and I'm like, it's probably because of the illustrations, so like, you should just really consider this to be Clara's book. Aside from the book, where does your work usually show up?
Yeah, so I do a combo of things. I do a lot of editorial work.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I feel like I'm most comfortable and sort of like my style lens. But
What does that mean, editorial work?
So like in magazines and newspapers.
Like someone will come to you and say, hey, we're trying to illustrate this piece.
Exactly,
yeah.
So I just did a piece for the LA Times.
Oh, cool.
And it was like really fun. I had a lot of liberty with that one, and I just sort of like drew a mom in a convertible and a girl. I don't know. It was very me. It was fun. And ironically, I was in LA in the moment when they asked me. It was really weird. I was just like, okay, sure. But yeah, so I do a lot of like print stuff, but then that's not really a good way to pay the bills at all. It's
right.
Amazing. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's great for recognition, so it's invaluable for that. But a lot of times, it's not really doing too much for you. So I do a lot of work for ad agencies. Mm-hmm. I do branded projects.
Cool.
A lot of things that are not necessarily always presented even to the world that are internal. Mm. Those are like the most lucrative, honestly, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
My husband is a director. I do his storyboards, which is really fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I do that actually quite frequently. And then, you know, I just did a couple more projects for Union Square & Co. actually.
Oh,
I did a deck of tarot cards that are coming out in the fall that are New York City themed tarot cards.
That sounds with an amazing tarot writer.
Yeah. It was so much fun. And it was kind of cool because I went straight from doing Saved by the Blini into the tarot cards. So I was just like
steeped in it.
Went through it all. Yeah. I have a puzzle coming out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What's on the puzzle?
The puzzle is people eating in Washington Square Park.
Wow. Wow.
So it's just like...
I feel like you certainly have like a very recognizable over like your...
Yeah.
Food, New York, comics.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally. And sometimes I'm like, maybe I should break out of this a little, but I love drawing food. Yeah. That's another thing. I do a lot of work for like restaurants and... Mm. I do tons of merch as of late, for small places, bigger places. There's a truck in LA driving around wrapped in my illustrations, which is fun. It's like a big
food truck.
Yeah. Okay. Food truck. That's a big, it's chopped cheese. It's just a giant drawing of chopped cheese.
Amazing.
It's some New Yorkers that started a chopped cheese truck in LA, but yeah, it's all cool. Anything. I pretty much say yes to like anything that sounds fun at this point.
Yeah.
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 Which is a nice place to be.
It does. It is a nice place to be. Well, thank you so much for joining me. People
Thanks
can find you
me.
At doodle_deli on Instagram.
Yep.
Anywhere else?
Yeah. My website is doodledeli.me.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Saved by the Blini is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.